The only thing better than an exclusive from Josh Wiggler might be 2 months of free CISO with our promo code RHAP. CISO is comedy for comedy nerds. Check out some of TV's best comedy plus original series for free for 2 months with the promo code RHAP at CISO.com. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here to talk about the latest going on in the characters and the stories of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X here with the great Josh Wiggler in the Wiggle Room. Check it out.
Josh.
Josh.
Yes.
Lur.
Lur.
Hooray.
Lur.
Lur.
What?
Lur. We do the wiggle dance. We do the wiggle dance. We do the wiggle dance.
Yes.
Yes. Remember when we did the wiggle dance all through the streets of Manhattan earlier this week, Rob, after the live Know-It-Alls after party?
Of people.
Yeah, it was like that scene in the opening of the first Austin Powers movie where Austin is just like running around and accumulating more and more background dancers. And everybody just like does like sort of like the big flock with their arms creating big T's and moving, dancing towards the camera. That was us. It was all of us.
I was going to say Weekend at Bernie's 2, but sure, we'll go with that.
Oh, man, that's the second Weekend of Bernie's reference in my life in the past like 48 hours. That's good.
Okay.
Feeling great about that.
All right. Well, good stuff, Josh. Happy to be back with you after seeing you in person this week at the live Know-It-Alls. Here we are back in our usual arrangement in the Wiggle Room.
Yes, it was great to dance with you, but otherwise you were in high demand, Rob. I barely got any FaceTime with you this week.
It's tough. It's tough. You know, get pulled in a lot of different directions with these things.
Did you have a good night? Did you have fun? Who did you talk to? What did you see? What did you do?
I mean, I tried to talk to just about everybody that was there. And, you know, I always like to try to get to see, because I don't really see too many of the Survivor alumni, like outside of the podcast setting. So I always like to have some chats with them and then get to see a bunch of the different, you know, people that come out to these things. So, you know, I don't get to talk to any one person for very long. I sort of get, you know, just pulled from like, you know, one direction to the next. I did have dinner with Steven before the show, which we haven't done before.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, that was nice.
Where'd you guys go? What did you have?
We went to the Five Napkins Burger, which was near the Caroline's Comedy Club. And that
so
was
as
very
far
nice.
As survivors who have impressed you on solo dinners, he has a little bit of work to go before he becomes Johnny Fairplay.
Yes. And
like,
so
he didn't make you put a jacket on or anything like that.
No, we didn't go to any sort of like a five star. Is that right? Is that the star rating? I'm not sure. I mean, I don't want to throw it, disparage the
you don't want
great
to throw
five
any star shade at the Five Napkins.
Yeah, it was
you know?
Very
They've
good.
Got five napkins. Who cares if they have five stars?
Yes. So that was a very nice dinner with Steven. And that was a nice sort of set up. The only thing with that was that, you know, I would like to talk less. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to hang out with Steven and talking a lot before we even do the show. But no, it was fine. Even with doing a show on Tuesday, I didn't lose my voice at any point.
Yeah. You had the OTT as well. So it was a packed week for you, but no, it was great. You know how to throw a party, Rob. For somebody who doesn't like to go out and party very much, you sure know how to throw a party. It was an awesome, really, really awesome night. Lots of great people, lots of great listeners of the podcast. It was really fun meeting so many people. And yeah, talking to a lot of the different Survivor alumni, you know, some that I've never met, people that I haven't seen in a while. It's cool to see Aubrey. Michelle seemed like she was having a crazy time. It was so weird that Silas Gaither was there. Like, that was really fun. Like, a little bit of a throwback to Survivor Africa in the mix. On the same week that you had T-Bird there, I thought that was cute.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Yeah, no. Very unexpected. Very unexpected.
Very unexpected. I got into like a really, really intense talk with him. Silas was really, really hip to millennials versus Gen X. I think he takes the Gen X thing very personally, Rob.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that with T-Bird.
Yeah. He's really, I think, paying close attention to this season for that reason. He got into a really long conversation with me about his hot takes on the season. Him and actually Dale Wentworth were both really, really fired up during Know-It-Alls. And the two of them were talking to me. I had my recorder on me. So luckily, we've got some copy of this here if you want to hit the conversation with Silas and Dale.
Sometimes, sometimes, sleep in the cuddle shack, but these two dumb fools are straight up having sex. There's no place for pigs to hide at all, cause she got voted off. Nothing lamer. No way that any person on that beach was gonna let
What yeah, a big so, week for the Disney afternoon on Rob as a Podcast.
Indeed. And just, it was really great to hear from Silas, Chip Gaither, and Dale Wentworth together, just really ripping figtails apart. Big Adam Klein fans, those guys.
I thought you were going to go with the Rescue Gainthers.
The Rescue Gainthers. I mean, if that was their team up, I think that that's what they would call themselves. They did seem like they were getting along really well. So you never know. You might see Chip and Dale as on a future Blood versus Water season as like best friends.
Josh, how are you handling the breakup of Figgy and Taylor?
Very difficultly. This has been actually kind of stressful in my life. Not that I needed any more stress to be thrown at me, Rob, but this whole Figtails thing spinning out of control has really complicated things this week for me, as I'm sure it complicated things for you.
Yeah, it's complicated for everybody, I think.
I don't think that that's the relationship status on Facebook. I think it's just an outright not together.
It's over.
It's over. It's complicated. It was complicated. But no, that was really... very much a big part of my week. I mean, we have the exit interviews that we do on Thursdays after we talk, after the episode on Wednesday night, and you get to talk to the person who got voted out. And I talked to Figgy as I normally do. And I was very, very stunned at the news that she and Taylor were not together. And she was talking kind of enigmatically about it, you know, talking sort of vaguely about some sort of thing that happened post game that did not sit well with her. So she and Taylor are not together. So I was, you know, very curious about that. And I started trying to, you know, dig into it a little bit more. And it didn't really come together for me very well. It's been difficult.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it took a turn that nobody saw coming.
It took a turn. Yeah. Well, I wanted to do
the biggest twist so far, millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah, it happened off camera. But no, I wanted to do my diligence here. I wanted to do my research. You know, I had talked to Figgy. I actually haven't even posted my exit interview with Figgy yet as of this recording, because I really wanted to get both sides of the thing. If you want to hear a little bit of a clip of my interview with Figgy, I'm happy to do that. It's still not posted yet. So this is
sure,
truly exclusive here for the Wiggle Room.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Listen up, y'all, cause this is it. The story of Figs getting voted out 6.
Figalicious definition makes Taylor Kalala. He wears love goggles, but he cannot ogle since the tribe swap. Still he sees me, still he squeeze me. It ain't easy, he is sleazy. My big reason why I tease him is to drag him through the season. Figalicious,
so delicious.
But my tribe's not hip to this. Ken and Jess are suspicious, and Adam's feeling vicious. My vote misses. That puts me on the chop block. And if it wasn't for the swap, I would have won. Maybe not. Figalicious. Figalicious.
That puts Figgy on the chop block.
Figalicious.
They want to split up while she's gone.
I'm Figalicious.
Okay, so that was for my interview with Figgy, and so I was
is
like,
that
okay.
Wand I Am in the background?
Yeah, Wand I Am was in the background for sure. She's been hanging out with a lot of the people from the Millennials cast. It's funny that you should bring that up. Wanda's really not taking sides in this thing. I had reached out to Taylor after the exit interview because I wanted to confirm that things were not going well. I got a pretty swift reply. Here's the reply from Taylor.
Figs and Taylor are never ever getting back together.
Okay, so
no.
Swift reply from Taylor, and Wanda hanging out with both Figgy and Taylor. So really trying to manage the fallout of this off-screen breakup between the power couple of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. Very sad stuff, Rob, and I still don't know what to think.
Yeah, this is probably the pop culture breakup of this generation.
Of all time, perhaps. Perhaps.
For the Gen Xers, it might have been when Zach and Kelly Kapowski broke up at the senior dance. But
Got it. So are we waiting for Survivor the College Years to get Taylor and Figgy back together? Is that how it's going to work out with like a wedding in Hawaii? Is that where we're going? That's where
Yes. Hopefully it'll all work out. All right. Well, Josh, let's get into some of the other stuff besides the Figgy and Taylor of it all.
You've covered it well enough. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
Extensive coverage, breaking news, 24 hours, 24 hour news cycle. middle of the Figgy and Taylor breakup, continuing coverage. But indeed, let's talk about some other things. Josh, is there something specific that you want to jump into with the characters from this season?
Yeah, there's definitely something very specific that I'd like to jump into, which is how was Pop Fest? How did Rob Sesternino do at EW Pop Fest? How was that? Was it good? Was it fun? Was it great? Was it grand?
Yeah, very fun. It was for the uninitiated,
just for people who don't know what it is. Yeah, give us the rundown.
So Entertainment Weekly, they had sort of like their own answer, I guess, like to Comic-Con. I think that's probably the easiest way to describe it, where they had a bunch of different panels, and then they had musical performances, and they had like a big Survivor setup where Dalton Ross was going to be talking with Jeff Probst on stage, and they did like a whole Q&A, and they actually aired a few minutes of this next episode. Where we were, I wasn't really able to catch any of what was going on. So I'm actually...
And also because you're a purist, you just stuck your fingers in your ears and closed your eyes and went la, la, la. You didn't want to hear anything. You want no preview.
I would have liked to have seen it, but it was hard to hear anything from where we were. So I'm like, it's probably better for me because I still have to record podcasts talking about this past episode. And so I'm still unspoiled in terms of, but they only watched like the first like act and then the reward challenge. So that's all they showed at the Pop Fest. So I wouldn't be surprised if that stuff starts to leak out, like who's going to win reward in this next episode of Survivor. But then they had a bunch of returning players back to go and compete in challenges with fans who were there. So it was Ozzy, Woo, Abby, yes, Maria, Mari, Ty, and Nat 10 and myself were there. So I think there were seven of us all together.
Look at you, the elder statesman of this group.
Yes. Well,
at least in terms of being on Survivor the longest. I'm not trying to say anything else.
Right. I mean, Ty is older than me.
Sure.
Ozzy, I think, is probably pretty close to my age. Yeah. Abby Maria, I think, is probably the same age as me.
How did it go between Woo and Abby?
Well, Abby was like Facebook Living the whole time, and she was like, she was really hustling on the Facebook Live. And I said, Abby, are you still mad at Woo? And she said, no. So, you know, Abby is always lovely off the island. You know, something might happen to her on the island, but I've never known her to be anything but fun off the island.
All right, so tell me other stories. How did you do in the challenges? Did you hold up? Were you okay? Any blindfold challenges that they threw at you?
No blindfold challenges. So they had like five or six different setups for challenges. I only did a couple of challenges in the time that I was there. I was in the challenge where it was basically the challenge that we saw between the millennials and the Gen Xers this season, where you had at the end, you have to throw the sandbags to knock the blocks down and put the puzzle back together. And right. So I was part of a team of three people. It was me and another guy who was actually a writer on The Great Indoors, who's a Survivor fan. And he was throwing the sandbags. He did a really good job. And then I was part of the team with me and John, the writer, and also a little girl. And we put the puzzle
John,
together.
The writer working for a CBS sitcom.
Not John Cochran.
I'm wondering who this is, this secret John is.
No, but the other writer that was there, he says he has Cochran's old office from the Millers. So,
and how does he feel about that? He feels pretty good. That feels pretty good.
Feels okay. He's not really a Survivor fan, but I hope it's not a cursed office or anything like that.
Wow.
So we'll see. But that was fun. I won that one challenge. And then I was in the second challenge that I was in, which actually was like a pretty grueling challenge. Do you remember the challenge from Ko Rong where Cindy won, where you have to like, it's called, I think it's like Topsy Turvy or Tip Topsy.
Tip Top Toesies. I was really hoping that you were going to say that it was the challenge from Ko Rong where everyone had to dig into the sand pit and it did not go well.
No.
I wanted to see how they did it at Pop Fest. That would have been
cool. It's where, you know, you have to stack the blocks on like the tray table that sort of is on a swivel. And so if you like let the rope have too much slack, all your blocks are going to fall down, which
sure,
is
sure. Yeah. They've been doing this for a few seasons. Like that's Tyson. Really? He kicked some butt on that back in Blood versus Water. So that's a Survivor favorite, right?
But this was specifically where you had to stack up the blocks to spell out the word immunity from the bottom up. And I took on a woman from the audience in that. And I did lose that challenge.
You did lose that challenge. Yeah. I did see the photo of that on the Facebook.
Yes.
Not on Abby Maria's Facebook Live.
My
strategy on her Facebook
was really to adopt the Sydney strategy of that, where I was just going to go as slow as possible. And I said, she's either going to beat me straight out or or I'm going to win because my stack is not going to fall down. So, but with no pressure coming from my side that she was able to also go as slow as possible. And the woman,
I think that's the move. I think the move is you got to be calm, cool, and collective and hope that the other person isn't. All you can worry about is yourself in that case, Rob. Yeah. So it sounds like you still got it. Sounds like you still got all the tips and tricks that you need to apply to all of these Survivor challenges. Kierhofer's got nothing on you. So we're good, right? We're going to send you back out. You've overcome your fears.
I'm good.
You're ready to go. You're not nervous anymore. You're gonna sign up for season 38.
No, it was very fun. The fans were great. Everybody was great. But I have to say my biggest takeaway, though, Jeff Probst is in such phenomenal shape.
He looks good, right? Oh, my God.
I mean, good is not the word. I mean, yes. That he has gotten swole. Am I using that right?
Swole is millennial? Correct. Yeah, he's swole. I believe that's right. He is swole. I would say Jeff Probst is swole.
I mean, that he is almost like that. The Jeff Probst that I knew from when I was on the show is gone. Like, I mean, he was kind of like a wiry guy. And now, I mean, he has become like Hugh Jackman Wolverine. I don't know if he's feeling the pressure from Jonathan LaPaglia. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. But he really does kind of look like Hugh Jackman Wolverine. I mean, like put a beard on him and toss him in the Logan trailer and you wouldn't know the difference.
I mean, Jeff Probst he came in like a white t-shirt and he had like a denim jacket on. He's like, okay, well, and then he took the denim jacket off. I was like, oh my God.
You know, not for nothing. Logan loves denim jackets. So, you know, I think Probst is Wolverine. I think that we've just hit on something that, that should have been discovered a lot longer ago. You know, he's kind of got the more comic book accurate height. Like it'd be good.
I don't know if it's caught up to the show yet. In terms of where, like, maybe you don't see this until the reunion show, or like, it seems like he has gotten more. I mean, and maybe it's just not playing on the show, but usually it's like the camera adds 10 pounds. You think that you'd be like even bigger on the show.
No, those t-shirts, they show off a lot of buys on that Jeff Probst. He's looking good. Swole is the word. Swole is the word.
Yes. It's impressive. Dalton Ross was great and everybody was very fun yesterday. Everybody was in a good mood.
That's great. I'm very happy to hear it. Should we talk about this season of Survivor instead of all of this miscellaneous nonsense that we've discussed so far?
No. Well, according to all of the comments that I'm reading in the future, everybody was like, oh boy, I really liked how they spent all this time before they really got into the season. Everybody on Reddit and in the comments section all love this part.
Would you believe it? A derailed wiggle room. It's never happened before.
It's fine.
Never happened.
It's fine.
It's never happened.
Okay, so Josh, I wanted to talk to you about the story of one of the characters in this season in particular.
And so you've got a place that you would like to start.
Well, I have a question that I really want to ask you about with one of the characters in mind. And that is the story of Hannah, because I'd like to get your take on where you feel like this is going, because we sort of established this, and I probably mostly insensitively, if that's a word, that have dealt with the panic attack storyline of Hannah, and probably in too crass of a way have sort of downplayed, you know, the seriousness of, you know, what she might be going through. And again, I do apologize about that. But in terms of her storyline, where we have her just this indecisiveness at tribal council, and then we have sort of the not picking up on the emotional intelligence cues of like, I don't want to talk about this right now. And then having the panic attack while sitting on the sidelines in the reward challenge. Do you feel like, I've talked about how it's very early in this game that, you know, we haven't even reached the halfway point where the game starts to really turn into a pressure cooker. And, you know, I know myself, like in the final six of Survivor the Amazon, there's a moment where I'm like, I need cigarettes. I need vodka. I need I'm really getting very stressed out here. Do you feel like that the story of Hannah is going to be one of kind of like Cochran in the Karamoan, where he's able to sort of, you know, like a diamond, just sort of like the pressure sort of like gets to him and he's able to, you know, come out of this, you know, like Daenerys Targaryen walking out of the flames, or
that's a mental image of Cochran as the Khaleesi emerging without any clothes with three dragons.
I'm combining so many metaphors together.
Yes.
But do you feel like that the story of Hannah is going to be one where she rises above this? Or do you feel like that the story of Hannah is going to be one where all of these idiosyncrasies and all of this anguish ultimately is something that drags her down?
This is a really great question, I think. And, you know, we didn't spend a ton of time on Hannah this week in this episode, but this certainly was her big moment. And there was some fallout from it when she's in her conversation with Sunday and talking about how panic, it's not necessarily like a moment of panic. It's suppressed panic. It's accumulated panic. And this is a game where you're not constantly addressing all of your emotions. So you're bound to, if you're prone to panic attacks, that's bound to come at you eventually. So I did have a lot of sympathy for Hannah on that front as somebody who does have some anxiety themselves, has never really been in that bad of a situation. The closest I can think of is like the panic attack I had when I did a VR run on a challenge from The Amazing Race, when I did a location visit for that. And I was in a cave. It was the first roadblock from the first episode of the latest Amazing Race season, if you remember that one. And I really did not do well, and I collapsed, and it was terrible, and it was awful. So I have some sympathy for what that feels like. But as for whether it's something that you're going to rise from or something that's going to really sink you down, and going back to the Cochrane comparison, I mean, you're comparing it to Cochrane from Caramon, where he's really rising from the ashes, but those ashes are South Pacific. You know, he has a full season where he really does succumb to anxiety in so many different cases. I mean, he makes choices that are risky choices and makes decisions that are decisions that he owns that do end up burning him later on, but at least short term, giving him a few more days at least. But I think that those are all decisions that are made out of fear and anxiety in a lot of those cases. And he doesn't do well that season. He does come back in a future season, does really, really well. But within that 39 day context, I think he does drown in that a little bit. And I think for somebody who's never played the game before, somebody who does come to it with some anxiety, somebody who does come into it prone to panic, it's certainly a risk. It's certainly something that you got to imagine you're going to have to confront eventually. I would be very worried about that, you know, just like the nerves, you know, the social anxiety that comes with playing a game like Survivor, that would probably cripple me pretty poorly. And I probably would not do very well for that reason. But I think that the way that she handled it and the way that she rebounded from it didn't seem like anyone was making fun of her. It didn't seem like anyone was mocking her for it. Brett seemed like he, you know, to Brett's credit, a lot of like good Brett stuff in action, not in words this week, with Brett really being kind of a calming force there. Sunday talking it through with her. I do wonder what the other millennials think of it, since she seems to be at least not in the conversations that are happening with Jay and Will and Michaela. So I wonder if we're seeing her veer a little bit more toward this, you know, millennial Gen X hybrid alliance that we've kind of theoretically said could happen. So that's something that could possibly be in the works. But as far as her conquering it, is this the start of a story of Hannah figuring out how to rise out of anxiety and really channel this and do something amazing? That's certainly on the table. But I think the other thing is also on the table, that this could be here, you know, which wasn't a major moment, wasn't sort of this massive takedown moment of Hannah here in this episode, but may have just been here to sort of set up the idea that this is something that could happen again. And maybe it happens at a more pivotal moment where it's not very good for Hannah. So I think it's a great question to call out, because I do think that it's something that's here that could be a reference point. We might be coming back to this moment later on in the season and being like, oh, well, we saw the start of it right here, whether that's for good or for bad reasons.
Because the other interesting part of this story for me is that we already kind of are getting this story from another player this season who's on a much more accelerated trajectory, where David was such a mess in the first episode. And I feel like that he has already almost overcome whatever sort of fear and anxiety that he had in this season. And I think that T-Bird talked about this a little bit in my conversation with her, that she feels like at some point David and Hannah are going to end up working together, and maybe that they end up drawing strength from each other in this. But I do feel like that we have this story of this person who has this crippling fear and anxiety, and he somehow has overcome it. And maybe by way of Ken, maybe he's almost like the, who is it? Holy Wayne. Is that, would that be a good comparison?
Leftovers.
Yeah. To able to help people with just a hug, get over whatever is holding them back. Do you think that that could be part of this storyline, Josh?
That's the only reason I ever related to Holy Wayne, is the desire to hug people's pain away. I have that as well. I love that. I think that's very funny. And I think that that's actually a great call by T-Bird. You know, this idea that we have seen David's insecurities, we have seen his anxieties so pronounced on the show. And then we've seen him take charge of the game. And I thought very interestingly, we come back in this episode from Tribal Council, having voted out CeCe, and David's not sweating the decision at all. You know, people have been questioning that choice throughout the week. I think maybe less so than they were questioning the whole thing with giving the idol to Jess a couple weeks earlier. But I think that David, he comes back, and at least as it's presented, he's like, that was the totally right call. That was absolutely the right thing to do. So we're seeing definitely a lot more of a confident David than we've seen before in this episode, at least. And also seeing him be decent in the challenge. I mean, not so great in the blindfold challenge, but he is dragging these huge, heavy bags on the beach, and he's doing pretty well there. So I think that we're starting to see sort of the dissolution of that anxious shell that has sort of surrounded David from the start of the season, and that's starting to strip away. And you wonder if that will go away for Hannah or if it will just get worse for Hannah, but we do have precedent on the show, at least right now, for somebody overcoming that kind of story, conquering that type of fear. And I think that there's other reasons that you could see David and Hannah getting along from the fact that David's a TV writer and Hannah is into that stuff. So I feel like there's something there. I feel like that that's a really good possible call on T-Bird's part, that you could see David helping Hannah out of this. Or at the very least, it could be a bonding point between the two of them, even if it's not like a big dramatic story.
And certainly the precedent is there, just going back to last season and the saga of Aubrey, because I feel like that, well, I don't think that anything that Aubrey did in the pre-merge was quite as bad as some of the stuff that we've seen from Hannah, but they do have sort of the similar moment with the hesitation in the voting booth. And it wasn't until Neil went out of the game that Aubrey really started to come into her own in the post-merge game and really started to slay and Queen Aubrey and all that stuff. Do you feel like, is that a possibility where if Hannah then makes a big move where she really starts to galvanize the audience and starts to get people calling her Queen Hannah?
Right. Well, I think that you have to figure, like, what is the moment where that happens? You know, what is the moment where Hannah slay? Like, and does that require losing an ice cream man of sorts the way that Aubrey loses Neil and her game opens up a lot from there? I don't think Hannah really has that.
No.
Not that I could see. I mean, she was close with Zeke and Adam and Mari once upon a time, but we haven't gotten any kind of follow up on that. And again, like, we're really not seeing her much with Jay and Will and Michaela from that first scene, and in the secret scene with Will, he's talking about Hannah does not know about the idol. So I don't know who her like close partner is. And I don't know what her move is. That's like a complete flip the game on its head type of thing. I think that with Hannah, and if we are seeing that, you know, through Zeke and Adam being two guys who have made conscious choices now to start blending millennials and Gen Xers a little bit more together. And if that is going to be a factor come the merge, an alliance that combines a few of the lost warriors, you know, people who are not necessarily going to be sticking with their original tribal lines. Does Hannah get pulled back into that? You know, she did have that whole use me moment. So will that come to pass? Will she be used? And will that be, you know, her finding use in a situation where people are going to be really psyched about her? I think any move to go on Team Zeke and Team Adam right now seems like a good publicity move at the very least.
Josh, we have some questions for you to get into some of these other topics. Are you good with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Here's a question that we actually have an audio question for you from Randy Rice. Let's go ahead. Let's play this.
Judging by what Michaela's saying and how she's saying it at the challenge and what Adam's doing at Tribal and the decision he's making, are we set up for a battle down the road between Adam's brain, Michaela's mouth?
Yes!
Yeah! Okay. Where did this question come from, Josh? Where is this? Is that a rave?
Yeah, that's the rave known as the Live Know-It-Alls. Yeah, that was Randy and I having a conversation, not Bailey, Randy Rice, the great Randy Rice, having a conversation during the Live Know-It-Alls with him asking if Michaela being so brash and being so vocal about her opinions, is that setting up a conflict against Adam later in the season, a man who seems to be a lot more measured about what he is saying and how he's communicating his true thoughts? Are we in for a war between Michaela's mouth and Adam's mind, is what Randy had asked. And in the aftermath of that question, a drunken Josh Wiggler said, yes. But I don't know what Josh Wiggler says today.
Well, I would say to that, I don't think that that's where we're going. That I don't know necessarily if Michaela is going to be that pissed when we have everybody come in, hey, get a load of your new orange tribe. and or Purple Tribe, and Figgy voted out, and I don't think that we're going to see Michaela be really annoyed about that.
I gotta imagine that we're gonna see Michaela like run over and give Adam a big hug for what he's done. She hated Figgy.
Yeah.
She was not a fan of Figgy. He took care of a big problem for her. She's got to be happy about this. And she even shouts out before, you know, Takali goes off and leaves the challenge. She says to them, you guys have three millennials on your tribe. If you can't figure that out, you deserve to go home. So Michaela's feelings on the matter are pretty clear. But I do think in terms of, you know, forecasting the future a little bit, maybe a better version of this question is, will Michaela's mouth get her into trouble at some point down the line? You know, like, I think that she's been hilarious. She's been really funny. That confessional that she has right after she finds Jay finding the idol, just like stomping forward and going, hey, what you got there? You know, this is great, great character stuff. But you and I talked about this a little bit in the Wiggle Room last week of like amazing, amazing character, still not seeing a ton in terms of gameplay. And after a certain point in time, to me, it feels like, does this personality, you know, somebody who is so vocal, somebody who is as truthful, even if Michelle thinks the truth works well in this game, will Michaela's type of truth work well in this game at a certain point down the line, or is it going to get her into trouble?
We'll see. So far, she has been Teflon.
Yeah, she has been Teflon so far. I mean, she's ridiculous in challenges. That's just clear at this point. But so far, no one seems to be coming at her. But I think that the combination of her really speaking her mind, having this information about Jay's idol, I think that at some point you're either going to see her blow somebody's spot up in a really, really incredible way that works out very, very well for her, or blows her own spot up. Not quite like Keith Nail is a bad comparison, but maybe something Stick to the Plan-esque.
Yeah.
Where she reveals something that shouldn't be revealed. I can see it going either way, and I'm just not sure which way it's going to go. There's no question in my mind, though, that there's a blow up moment that is in the horizon. And Michaela is going to be at the epicenter of it. And it's going to be fantastic to watch. It just might not be good for her. Or maybe it's going to be great.
Josh, I have a great email question that comes into us from Lawson. And of course, you could email the Wiggle Room all week long. WiggleRoom@robiswebsite.com. Lawson writes in and asks, hey, guys, I'm wondering, do you think that we might see an Anakin Skywalker to Darth Vader story arc from Taylor? He starts off as an innocent young boy, finds himself in a relationship he shouldn't be in, then things quickly turn. After losing a battle against Obi-Wan Kenobi, he vows vengeance and turns evil. It all checks out to me. What do you think of this story, Josh?
But who's his Obi-Wan? Who is his mentor? Who's the one who's just cut off Taylor's arms and legs and screams at him and says, you were supposed to be the chosen one?
Yeah, it was Ken.
That's Ken?
Yeah.
Obi-Ken Kenobi?
You're supposed to be the chosen one, Taylor.
Has anyone told you yet that your Ken sounds sort of like your Jonas?
Jonas? Wow. Well, you know,
like shades of your Jonas in your Ken.
Boy.
Got a little bit of Jonas in your Ken.
Okay. All right. Well,
just touch.
You know, everything is some combination, you know, just like in terms of the, you know, every color is some version of, you know, red, blue, and green. And we just sort of like mix them all together. So there's a little bit of something in everything.
I think it's red, blue, and yellow.
Whatever.
I was hoping that you were going to say, like all things, there's a little bit of Jonas in all impressions. Is there anything to Taylor being an Anakin type? I mean, he's already kind of been an Anakin type in that he's been insufferable, that he's been very difficult to watch at times.
Yes.
But I think that, I don't know. I don't know that Taylor's got the chops for long-term vengeance in the game of Survivor. Do you? I mean, I don't think, you know, maybe with Figgy, he had a sounding board. He had somebody that he could trust 100% and he could really bounce ideas back and forth from. And, you know, maybe that is going to lead to some sort of game decision that's going to be beneficial. But I feel like Taylor, without Figs, I don't know where he goes. I mean, the best thing for him is like to reunite with Jay, and Jay can take his bro back under his wing. But Taylor's not going to be in charge of that situation. Jay has puffed his chest up too much to let that happen at this point. So I don't know. I don't know if there's any sort of long-term vengeance that we could see out of Taylor. He just, at least through six episodes, has demonstrated absolutely nothing game-wise that tells me he's got the chops to carry out a Darth Vader vengeance plan.
Yeah, I don't think that Taylor is going to be making this his mission in life to go after whoever took Figgy out of the game to the point where he's like going to be really sour about this the whole time. I think he's just going to be like, all right, whatever, man, easy come, easy go. And then just try to pick up the pieces and move from there.
I mean, I think
he's
going to be
that snowboard, Josh. You get right back up on it.
So I've heard. I feel like Taylor could be very, very sour and salty about
for
what just happened to Figgy. Yeah, or for 3 days and then get voted out. Like, I don't see a long term thing here for Taylor. And I think that, like, it's the same thing as like the as we already discussed, Dale Wentworth. But like the getting rid of Kelly and then Dale systematically type of thing. Like, I would not be shocked if Taylor is gone as early as this week. I don't see long legs for him in the future of this game. And I do see a big part of that possibly being because he's not going to be able to handle this emotionally maturely. There's nothing that Taylor has put forth on the show this season so far that suggests to me otherwise.
If he survives these next couple of weeks and ultimately makes the jury or makes the merge and is able to hang around, is there any upside for him where he becomes a fan favorite again, or between all of the off show stuff, do you think that he is irredeemable?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think it's going to be a tough path for him. And I could be reading this wrong. I don't get the feeling. And again, we've also discussed like what our perspectives are going to be, but I don't feel like the show has been trying to make him remarkably likable. I've never got that sense. Like, he always seemed to me to just be like a goofy bonehead. And I think eventually you're supposed to watch the goofy bonehead lose. So I really think that that's where we're going. And in terms of a path forward, I don't know. Again, I think that he could glom on to the remaining millennials.
But
and
does
maybe
he have Eddie Fox upside, Josh?
Eddie Fox upside means you get to the end of the game and you can win because you're likable enough and everyone wants to go to your dog bar. I don't think that however many, you know, Gen Xers are still going to be in the mix by the time that we're in a jury situation and say Taylor is there. I can't imagine who he's sitting next to where he's attracting Gen X votes the way that anybody else would. I don't know. It's early days yet. I would be floored with a Taylor win.
Oh, I don't think he can win.
That would be one of the most shocking outcomes to the season that I could possibly think of right now.
I'm just wondering, could he get to a point in the season where people are like, you know what? I did kind of like Taylor by the end.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they like him more than I guess I do. I don't know. We'll see.
Because people really like Jay.
Well, that's because Jay's a good dude.
Yeah, Jay's a good dude.
Did you like his secret scene where he was talking about pizza? Because I did.
Yes. Yes, I do. It was the second most popular YouTube video about CBS reality about pizza this week.
Oh, I actually saw the one that you're talking about. Thanks to Alex Kidwell. So I know what you're discussing.
Yeah, it was good, right?
The pizza dance. I liked it. It was great. Good song. All I liked it. That was the closest thing to getting me to watch Big Brother that has ever happened before.
Edmo wants to know, Edward Morris, is the tribal council the ideal place to get married, Josh?
Nope.
No.
I don't think so. I mean, what, you're going to get married and then you're going to lose your spouse 5 seconds later? That seems very depressing.
I don't know. I think it could be romantic. I mean, there's, candlelight.
Final tribal council, maybe. Final tribal council. Let me change my answer. Final tribal council might be the most romantic place to get married. Like, this is one of the things that's bad about showmances on Survivor too, is like, how are you ever going to top Rob and Amber in terms of iconic status and in terms of like the impact of the moment where Boston Rob proposes to Amber at the Survivor finale? Well, here's your answer, Rob. You get married at the final tribal council when you and your future spouse have both made it to the final two. How about that as a move? That's a good move.
Yeah, I think everybody votes for the other person in the final three at that point.
That person wins. Yeah,
wins.
The best man or maid of honor, that person wins.
Yeah, I do think that tribal council would be a nice setting for a wedding.
That's one of the few times it would be great to be a bridesmaid and not the bride.
Okay. Gregory wants to know, was getting rid of Figgy Adam's way to send a signal to Zeke to get rid of Michelle? Do you believe in the smoke signal theory?
The smoke signal theory, that it was Michaela trying to signal to Adam to get rid of Figgy?
No, not necessarily, but it was Adam getting rid of Figgy was Adam's way of telling Zeke it's okay to vote out Michelle.
Well, I think more than anything, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess like there's no clear signal from Zeke to Adam that we just got rid of CeCe, which means we're good. But if I'm Adam at that point, I am taking the ousting of CeCe as a sign that Zeke at least has working relationships over there, is at least working his end as well as he possibly can, knowing that Zeke is the other millennial who is on the down on the downside of the numbers in the millennial tribe like myself. So I think that from Adam's point of view, there should really be no fear whatsoever about the consequences of voting out one of Taylor or Figgy other than the immediate drama that happens back at camp. Like we said last week, this is the time. This is the moment. It's time to make a choice. It's time to draw a line in the sand. Survivor is happening. You're in the middle of it. You've already been revealed to not be on the inside of this massive tribe. You have the opportunity to cut out one of the power players from that old tribe that oppressed you. Why would you not vote for one of those people right now as we're nearing a merge if we're not right there? So I think that for Adam, I think that that's certainly going to be a great sign to Zeke that he did what he did. And I think it's going to be a clear sign to everybody in the game that Adam is willing to make moves like that. And I think that it will, you know, one of the big impacts, I think, of losing Figgy and Taylor is I do think that it will signal an end of millennials versus Gen X to a certain extent, where the people who are really pro millennials and the few millennials who are willing to mix it up with the Gen Xers, I think that line is going to be more pronounced in the sand after this.
Okay, Josh, one last question. This is from Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. The Survivor love story. Isn't this type of connection such a strong component in storytelling? I see so many people rooting against Figtails, but isn't every story richer with love? Josh, why have people so thoroughly, for the most part, rejected the love story element of millennials versus Gen X?
Hey, look, love stories are great. We love love stories. Everyone loves a good love story. I think that we may have found like the one show where it doesn't play so great. And I think that Survivor, this game for $1 million, that where you're out for yourself, it's an individual game. And I think that people, there are some people who are just offended at the notion of finding romance and finding love on that beach when you're supposed to be out there for a very different business reason. So I think that that grinds a lot of people's gears the wrong way. And I think that when you do like it, it's typically because like it's subtle, it's not super in your face. And really, even those examples are kind of few and far between. So I don't know. Sometimes the showman's works on Survivor, and sometimes it really does not. And the Figgy and Taylor one really did not work out, both on the show and off the show. I will say I'm glad that it existed. I think that it gave the pre-merge some fun material to chew on. I'm equally glad that it's done in the pre-merge and that it's not a thing moving forward for the rest of the season. I think that that's a fine pre-merge tale. But for that figtail to continue, yes, for that figtail to continue into the merge, I think that's when we're in danger. You're in danger at that point, Rob.
I do think it's pretty interesting, though, because it is such a big part of the storytelling of Big Brother. And I think that more often than not, especially with the quote unquote casual fans of the show, that the people that are in the showmances become some of the biggest fan favorites between the Brendan and Rachels and the Jeff and Jordans. Again, sorry to bring up the specter of the Big Brother, but it's just interesting to me that it becomes, you know, something that people, you know, really connect with on Big Brother. But it seems to be even among the casual fans of the show, from what I read from the Survivor Facebook page, that people did not care for the Figtails pairing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in terms of Survivor, at least, I don't know the difference between casual Survivor fans and casual Big Brother fans, but at least for casual Survivor fans, I think that they still at least want to see people doing well in the game, whether that's for strategic reasons, maybe less so than for challenge competition reasons, or for somebody that you really, really like and feel like they've got a good heart and everything. I don't know, just like the whole Figtails thing just never really felt like it exuded anything other than like an air of, why are you guys doing this? You should not be doing this. And I think that the commentary on the show from the people that they were on the beach with in most cases was a lot of that, of like, dangerous thing that you're doing, stupid thing that you're doing. So I think that the fact that the people on the show are also commenting in that way maybe helps either, it either reflects the view of the audience as well, or maybe fuels the view of the audience. But for whatever reason, Figtails did not land well at all.
All right. Good stuff, Josh Wiggler. What's the hashtag this week?
Oh my God. Do you have a good suggestion?
How about Wand I Am?
I like Wand I Am. Shout out to Alicia Rosen, who wanted a different hashtag for this podcast, but it's inappropriate. We will not do that.
Okay. Good stuff.
She knows what it is.
Yes. All right. Well, Josh, can you give us an update? Also, what's the cat situation?
Cat situation. Hopefully on the upswing. We actually got her to eat some food today. We're recording this on Sunday, pre-Halloween. Happy early Halloween to you, Rob. We are bringing her back to the vet on Halloween Day. hopefully get some x-rays back and some blood tests back and things like that. But at least she's eating and she seems to be more positive than she's been in the past. So I'm happy about that. Wednesday was a really, really, you know, just to go back to know-it-alls, was a really great night for me to just get out and kind of cut loose and let go of all that stuff. And it's been a couple of rough days, but hopefully we're swinging back in the right direction.
All right. And talking about swinging, how about that Walking Dead season 7 so far, Josh?
Oh, yeah. It's a thing. It's definitely a thing. Well, who knows? Maybe you and I will be more on the same page with the second episode of The Walking Dead. That is that podcast should already be available for your ears yeah. by the time that you're
I'm actually very excited for the Sunday night edition of The Walking Dead. Josh and I will have a full recap of that as well coming up on postshowrecaps.com. Talk about The Kingdom.
I love The Kingdom. Big fan of The Kingdom. I wonder how The Kingdom is going to play for people who haven't read the comics. It's one of the things I'm most excited for about the season is like, what's the reaction of this place going to be? But we'll find out very soon.
And I'm very excited, especially because, Josh, I hear that The Kingdom, the biggest feature that they have is that there is a tiger mom. Lucy may show up on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I think that Shiva the Tiger and Lucy the Survivor have about the same amount of spoken dialogue, which is to say none. They don't speak English.
Not Lucy the Bat, yes.
No, Lucy the Bat, the night or the Nightbird.
Yes, Lucille the Bat. Anyway,
yes.
So Josh, good stuff. Lots of fun, as always, on The Wiggle Room. Of course, Josh and I will be back again next week to talk about the stories through episode number 7 of Millennials versus Gen X. Next week, you can follow Josh on Twitter at Round Howard. And of course, we love to hear your feedback on robinswebsite.com. David Bloomberg is going to be the next show you're going to hear from us, where you're going to talk about why Figgy lost. So stay tuned for that. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Figs and Taylor are never, ever getting back together. Figgy and Taylor are never, ever getting back together. Talk to Big's friends, talk to Shirk. But Biggie and Taylor are never, ever, ever getting back together.